Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, hello, hello.
Looking fabulous.
Thank you. How are you all?
We're all right. Thank you very much. And are you joining us from Jersey?
I am.
Very nice.
It's miserable weather. The weather's like Glasgow today, I've got to be honest.
We're sunny.
There we go.
I have just taken my jacket off in your honour. I was wearing my big coat
earlier.
I told her about the fashion part of your CV. So she thought this item from Fred and Florence would impress you.
Exactly. I thought, I'll not wear my eiderdown.
And here's me in black, the customary black, so boring.
I'm in black, but that's to deal with obesity. But we can talk about that later. So, thank you for joining us, Tessa.
And pleasure.
The first thing that I want to know is, why did you move to Jersey? Because you're a Glasgow girl through and through.
I am, and I always will be, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Actually, quite an emotional one. My mum passed away in 2013.
Sorry.
I live next door to her. And she was my best friend in the world, very close to both my parents, I was. And I found it really hard because my entire world was all my memories of my mum and Glasgow and our village. I just saw her everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I just, thinking back now, I think every day about going back, but I get so overcome thinking about her.
Right.
And that was really the main reason. Interestingly enough, at the time, my husband he was doing a lot of work out in Los Angeles, and we were considering moving there for work. And we went out to see it, and that's another long story. But anyway, I got freaked out by all the earthquakes and things. I went for a meeting in Jersey for a client, and I remember not wanting to. Oh, I thought, what the hell's Jersey? Well, I don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. And I flew into Jersey, and it's beautiful beaches, very Californian-esque. They've got a lot of white beaches, really lovely. And it was so close. Most of my work's in London. And I just had this kind of epiphany of, actually, this is a wee bit warmer. It's almost France. Mm-hmm. It gets me out of Glasgow because I just wanted to run kicking and screaming because I was in a bad place.
Yeah.
I discovered Jersey and we fell in love with it. We thought, you know what? It's half an hour from London. It's still British.
Yeah.
And ironically, there's loads of Scots here, which is really funny. We never knew. And that was it. And we opened an office here and that's it. We brought my dad with us, actually. Right. He came with us and lived with us in Jersey and he's since passed away. But so that was the reason. So it was never anything other than just an emotional, heart-wrenching.
Because it is, isn't it? The painful memories. But hopefully in the future, then those painful memories become comforting memories. So
yes, no, absolutely. I mean, I've been back a few times. I've still got an office in Glasgow and my best friends in the world live there. And so I do go back. I still do. It's just the only thing, the way I can think to describe it is weird because no matter how old you are, I mean, I was, early 40s when I lost my mum and I lost my dad in 2019. Everybody I know still has their parents and it's quite weird not because I was so close to them. I mean, I spoke to my mum 10 times a day. I passed her house going to from work. I saw her all the time. She was very much part of my children's life, second mum to my children. Mm. It's just weird not having her there.
Yeah.
And it was definitely easier not being there. And I thought, you know what? It's time for me to pull on my big girl pants and create new memories for my own children. Yeah. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, there we go. You're like Tessa, you don't have your
No, both my parents. My mum died when I was 24 and my dad when I was 29. Mm-hmm. So, and I understand that feeling of always being surrounded by people who still have their parents, because it is a very different feeling. And until you go through it, you don't realise that sort of orphan status. But it is that sort of sense of not having anyone above you that loves the bones of you.
That's really interesting. You mentioned the word orphan. I still have both mine. Mary's 81 and she is mental. Had her on the phone this morning. And my father, he's not in the greatest of condition, but that's through brain injury, through stroke. We'll move on from that. But the orphan thing, because I've heard people say, oh, both my parents have passed, I'm in my 30s, I'm now an orphan. Mm-hmm. And obviously, clearly, A, because I'm gay, but B, the Annie thing, I kind of think that an orphan is a child, if you see what I mean. So did you buy into the orphan thing? Is that something that you related to?
100%, 100%, yes. I mean, you know, and I am an organiser and a go-getter and a hustler and whatever, but I never expected to feel so alone sometimes, because I think it's because I was so close to my mum. But you know, that way it doesn't matter what happens. If you just phone your mum, whatever issue or problem you have, and she gives you a line and you go, oh yeah, that was the right answer, I'm fine now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just, you know, oh, why did I even think about it? I'll just ask my mum or I'll ask my dad. Yeah. And suddenly you really, that's why I talk, my husband's always saying to me, you know, big girl pants, because that's how I feel. I think, God, I need to make every single decision on my own now. And that's quite, I mean, you'll know exactly what I mean. You were a lot younger than me, certainly. But, you know, it's life. And I feel, you know, I console myself with the fact that I'm very grateful that she knew all my children and, you know, she got to see so much, and as did my dad. So I mustn't complain. But I think it just comes out of because we were so close.
Yeah. And it is, it's that, and also it's just, the, you know, the passage of time and, you know, and your own mortality really comes a bit more into focus. And again, I mean, I did that sort of love thing. You know, my mum did pass away sadly before my kids were born. But for me, when my kids were born, it was another sort of revelation for me, because, I mean, I knew how much I loved my mum, but until I had my own kids, I didn't realise just how much she loved me. So it's that difference of just going, just how much you're loved. And so I miss that.
Yeah.
We've gone
quite so there we are.
Emotional. Well,
there you go. I mean, all I've got. It tugs at the old heartstrings. Yeah. It really does.
I think it's because these aren't normally the kind of conversations that you would have down the pub, if you see what I mean. With a minority of people, but just in general, that it's not, you know, necessarily up for discussion or whatever, because it's maybe seen as a bit too deep or, you know, whatever. And it's just amazing the way, because my sister-in-law, who I love dearly, she always said, because she lost both her parents in her late 30s and in a fairly tight window frame. And what she always said was, thank God I had your niece and nephew, because that's what got me through. And she was an only child. And from a small place and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, really a very different relationship to the one that I have with my mother, if you see what I mean. And Ian and Jean, they were involved in the children's lives, like you were saying, Tessa, and all that kind of stuff. Where are you pleased to see that your parents saw the success that you had, both on a professional level and within your own marriage, your own family?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, look, there's no bigger compliment than your parents saying, go on your cell, doll.
Yeah.
You know, and my dad was my father was my mentor, and he was, you know, he came from a very working class, poor Glasgow background, built up a brilliant business and knew what it meant. You know, he'd an outside toilet, the full story. But he really did push me. And I miss that, you know. I miss the brainstorming, I miss the banter, and, you know, Glasgow people are wise, you know, and they've got that brilliant, Scottish people in general, they've just got that kind of hustle and sarcasm and water off a duck's back, and that was him. And so I certainly do, because, you know, it's funny, I don't, you know, when people talk about your achievements, they don't really mean anything, because you don't believe them. The only people I ever believed was my parents. You know, my dad said to me, you know what, that was really good. See that? That's really good. Then I go,
But equally, when they would say, well, not so good, but because 100%. Parents can do that and be honest and open. And it's interesting that you're saying about it's not necessarily something you talk about down the pub, because it is that sense of vulnerability. And, you know, we all try to put on a brave face. And also, people really struggle with other people's grief. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, do you mean, are you okay? But they don't really want to know if you're not okay. Just like, please be okay for me because we can't cope. So it's nice to be able to talk about it out loud. Good.
Yeah. Talking of people that may or may not be difficult down the pub.
Oh.
And I think you know where I'm going.
Because
as you know, I'm Real Housewives daft, because obviously why wouldn't I be? You know, I think I'm the Lisa Vanderpump of Granton Harbour in Edinburgh. You know, with with the dog under my oxter and a bad attitude to boot. How was that? Because you were one of the Real Housewives. Are you still a Real Housewife of Jersey? Or do we know?
No,
are we allowed to say?
I did. No, it's public knowledge. I told them I wouldn't be returning for a third series. Look, from my perspective, it was brilliant fun. It was brilliant to be part of, you know. I mean, never, and again, it's a Glasgow thing. We're you know, I always say this to my kids, you know, always try and be humble. I mean, sometimes I would laugh, you know, I'd think, my God, I actually can't believe I'm on Housewife franchise. It was like, you know, I'm from Glasgow. How did that happen? So from that perspective, I loved the production of it. And because of what I do for work, for me, it was an area that I hadn't really delved into. So I actually got more excited by the production, seeing how they brought this whole thing to life, talking to the crew, working out all the, you know, just the whole behind the scenes production. Because I'm there thinking, if I see how they do one series, I reckon I could start producing TV too. And I mean, I've got a lot to learn. Going back to school, and, you know, I realised that everyone is freelance. You know, the production companies are there and they've got the heads that run them, but all the producers, directors, lighting engineers, everything. So I was fascinated by that perspective, and the green screening and doing all that. The, you know, the concept of the show, I think, you know, who can deny it? It's a worldwide success story, and being part of it was great. And I viewed it as a commercial opportunity for my brand, for my projects and my business. So from that perspective, hallelujah, it was fantastic.
Nailed it.
I mean, you know, I'm shameless. You know, I am, you know, I'm a workaholic, and I thought, wow, you can't knock back that PR. It's fantastic. And also, I'm not naive enough to think you need to be able to tell a good story. You need to be able to have content, as I always say to people. So I loved it from that perspective. The first series was great fun, because I felt it was organically driven. I mean, you know, you watched it, so you followed the storyline, because if something happened or disagreements happened, they happened as a result of conversations that evolved. So you could pick a team, you could go, oh, don't agree with her, oh, I do agree with her, and that's, for me, that's storytelling. The second series was a very different experience for me. I didn't enjoy it. I felt like an outcast. I wasn't in the squad, and therefore I didn't feel that it made as good TV as it should have done.
Because there wasn't, sorry to interrupt, there was a real divide. There were two camps in the second series. And
for what?
But that was the whole thing. So I've watched it religiously with my niece, who's so, and she's like, oh, you got Dr. Tessa Hampton on today? And I went, yeah, bitch. And she's like, well, can you ask her, first of all, how real is it being a Real Housewife? Which I think it is pretty real, but we just couldn't understand, particularly from Margaret. So there's another Scottish woman who's a property tycoon. Hello, my name's Margaret. Is the camera still on me? I mean, me and Katie used to, well, you know how Kate dressed up as you, as the bride? Well, me and my niece, we sometimes dress up as Margaret, just for fun in her flat, and just say things like, do you want a coffee? Is the camera still on me? Because this woman is like obsessed. A wooden spoon with like bad Botox and a wig. And she's not particularly authentic, is she? And she came away a bit quite enough. But I just couldn't understand the divide, because it was actually uncomfortable in some cases to watch. Seriously.
I had a lot of feedback. It was uncomfortable to film. And look, in terms of answering the question, what is real? It is real. What you see is what you get. No one, you know. In fact, my gripe with them was, they didn't show you all of my real reactions. And And I felt that my personality was stifled because they had decided that she's going to be that strong businesswoman, sassy, always drawing the dirty looks. Where in actual fact, I tried really hard, because if you know me and you speak to any Scottish Glaswegian person, their life is filled with sarcasm and wit. Uh-huh. So I delivered what I thought was good banter, because I got a lot of stuff thrown at me, and I gave it back the way we would do in our culture. And they didn't show any of that. They cut it all out. And so I was really disappointed, because I want people to, I would rather show the full argument show my sassy Glaswegian response. Yeah.
Because then you're...
It was never bitter. It was never nasty. It was cheeky and sarcastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was the only way I could think to deal with it. And then you didn't see it. So it didn't really
and
make
sense.
And
did you have any, you didn't have any control over the editorial mm-hmm. of it? Oh. Because I, years ago, I don't know if you remember this, I did, in fact, Janie Godley put me onto these, I did Wife Swap, that Channel 4 where you swap houses.
I remember that, yes.
And we were the first Scottish couple to do it. And I did it because I was quite new at comedy at the time. And in exactly the same reasons, I thought, oh, this would be quite good for my profile. And do you mean? But the way that they kind of storyboarded it was I was a filthy, lazy, unfit mother. But again, all my sarcastic responses, my dry sense of humour, they kind of lost that. And so, I mean, people that knew me just thought it was hilarious, but people that didn't thought I was some kind of scummy mum.
Yes,
mom.
They think you're that person. Yeah.
Yeah, they thought you were a midden, didn't they?
Yeah,
they
absolutely thought you were midden, an absolute. Yeah.
But it was funny, going back to Margaret, who is an interesting character, I thought that Karen didn't understand Margaret's sarcasm, particularly with the, have you had any work done or mind your own effing business, which I thought was really funny. But then that seemed to kind of go into a much bigger... deal.
Well, again, in Karen's defense, I think Karen got the short straw because that's not, it's not my recollection of events. Mm,
interesting.
And that's probably all I'm allowed to say, but I do defend Karen because she definitely got the short straw.
Right. Okay.
There's no shadow of a doubt. But again, if you watch the series, you think she's a total, you know.
Yeah. And so in terms of what you were saying, Tessa, you know, obviously the first series is absolutely great and for what you do, and it was a really positive thing. Yeah, in the, is it the flip side of the coin that actually now you think, well, this could do more damage than good for you to stay on the programme?
I think, well, I'm not, that's a very interesting question because it depends on who you ask. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always worked in media. So, you know, for me, a lot of things are, you have to have that strong water off a duck's back attitude. Otherwise, you'd shoot yourself. Mm-hmm. I don't really care what other people think because for me, it's like, look, guys, it's reality TV. Mm-hmm. You know, let's take it with a pinch of salt. It's supposed to be entertainment. It's supposed to be drama and glamour and all of that. What where I look at it is if it's the fun is stripped out of it and I'm personally not enjoying doing it, then it's not worth doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a shame because I love the concept. I love the idea of it. I would love to do a third series. I would love to carry on filming, you know, Housewives. I think it's a great opportunity. But I couldn't carry on the way it is at the moment. And that's simply a cast issue because I think they've all done themselves a disservice. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that's, you know, you nailed it, Bruce, because I don't think people want to watch that. It got too down to your core and it got too uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we're in 2022 now and we can still we have the housewife franchise and we still have all the drama and you're going to have those crazy housewives that do all the things that make us laugh. But equally, there should be an element of empowerment, you know, of showing women actually can fall out and have a go, but actually come back together again. And that's not how I felt. I felt like I was back at school.
Yeah.
And I thought,
and reinforcing the stereotype, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, gosh, you know, this is not why I don't want to go back to school. I hated school. Yeah. And here I am. And it's a shame because I do, you know, I did love it. And I think it was brilliant for Jersey. And I hope it continues for them because I think it's great for the island. You can't buy it. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, I think it is a great shame. Whether they'll shake it up or not, I don't know. Whether it'll get a third series, I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. But you know what? I'm hustling on other things.
Yay. always working. That's great.
Always and working.
Now you're always. The doctor. I'm interested in the doctor, Tessa Hartman. So Hartman.
Oh gosh. Well, the doctor I got is an honorary doctorate. I did a lot of work with Glasgow Caledonian University over the years, and particularly with all the work with Scottish Fashion Awards. You know, I supported a lot of young designers for many, many years. Did a lot of work in fashion and textiles, and. That was the accolade that I received, and I was very excited about it because I was never academic enough. I have a degree from Stirling University, believe it or not. So it was just such a thrill for me just to get that. And again, my mum and dad were there for that, so that was great.
Fabulous. And was it the classic with the whole fabulous gown and
oh yeah, the hat. Full regalia,
legally blonde,
full regalia. Yeah. Wonderful. Yes. I felt like the queen.
Elle Woods.
Yes, it was great.
You just said that you didn't perceive yourself to be particularly academic, and you didn't enjoy school. Things I can both relate to. So how did you get into what was the pathway to get where you are now, having left school?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Well, when I left school, I actually, believe it or not, I was going to go to drama college. And then I surprisingly did really well in my hires, much better than I ever expected. And I thought, oh gosh, I could go to university now, actually. And my dad was like, why wouldn't you? Because who'd have thought you'd do really well? So I literally got in through like the UCAS system at the end of the summer. I went to Stirling. I was doing business management, marketing and Spanish. And I was always like you, I was always doing like nightclub promos and stuff like that when I was growing up in Glasgow and doing events and things. And do you remember 1990? This is the only way I remember it, when it was European City of Culture, and we had we had the Special Olympic Games. And I had volunteered to work at the Special Olympic Games, signed up, I was a student, got a job for the summer. They didn't pay anything. It was just a volunteer. And the guy who was the marketing director on site in the office for Special Olympic Games, I was his gopher, if you like. Then he got ill. This is a brilliant story. He got ill. And 2 weeks into the gig, the Kennedy Foundation, obviously Kennedy family from Washington, their team comes over, and they were going to be based in Glasgow for like 3 months. And this amazing lady called Victoria, she's like, well, Brian's like ill and we're going to have to recruit. Da-da-da. How about we just like pay you something and you can be my assistant and help me? Da-da-da. So I was like, great, some money, this is fabulous. So I got myself a wee gig for the summer, and I was her right hand for that Special Olympic Games. And it was the most surreal, unbelievable experience of my life, because literally there I was, what was I, maybe 19, I was doing donuts, photocopying, all the stuff, all the mundane stuff of the day. Then at the same time, she would send me to meet a private jet and get Prince Albert off the airport at Glasgow Airport. I was organising all the VIPs for the opening ceremony. I was getting a set of Carmen rollers for Eunice Kennedy Shriver. You name it, I did it. And it was just, I lapped up this kind of buzzy, thrilly celebrity, but also work. I mean, yeah. Americans, work ethic is off the scale.
It sounds like a baptism of fire just to be thrown in. Absolutely.
I never said no, you know, no matter how knackered I was, I never said no. So anyway, did that for the summer. She then said to me, "You are amazing. We're doing a World Games next year in Minneapolis. How would you like if I gave you a job to come and work in Washington, D.C. for the first month, and then we'll go down to Minneapolis and you can be my assistant again for the World Games?" I was like, amen. And so I did that. And then a couple of years later, I was finishing university and I was applying for jobs. And she sent me an email and said, "We're giving our European advertising account to an American agency in London because you've done two World Games. Would you like to go for an interview?" And at that point, actually, I'd already, I don't know what possessed me, but I was thinking, how can I afford to live in London? I'll go work in a stockbroker's. I got a job in a stockbroker's and I was about to start. And this is probably the only thing that I never told my parents because I told them everything. And so I got this job and she sent me the letter and I said, "You to start on the Monday." She's like, "You need to go for this interview on the Monday." And I'm like, "Oh, Victoria," I said, "I've just accepted a job in a stockbroker's, and if I don't turn up my first day, they're just going to bump me. Mm-hmm. And if I don't turn up and then I don't get the job, I'll have lost too." So normally I would have phoned my dad and went, "Oh God, what will I do?" I thought he'd kill me. So anyway, I thought, you know what? I feel it in my gut. So I phoned in sick on my first day.
Wow.
I'm really sorry, you know, I had salmonella, whatever it was, food poisoning. Went for this interview, got the job. Whew, thank God. Then I told my parents and that was it. So, you know, that's how I got into this American ad agency. And again, you know, you start at the bottom and you learn the trade. And, you know, I was an assistant and then worked my way up to all the different stages. But it was brilliant because they really, you know, this is some things that I look at this generation now. I had to work in a print shop. I had to work in the design team. I had to work as a photographer's assistant. And then I went into the account team, then the management team. You know, you had to understand the entire business model, which I just don't think a lot of people are prepared to do now. I wouldn't be where I am today if they hadn't forced me to go through that training.
It's interesting because anyone that does know you will know your work ethic, your tenacity, and your incredibly varied CV. But recently Kim Kardashian had come out and said women don't want to work, they don't want to do this, and you're like, "Oh, Kim, yay, I understand, but look at where you're speaking from," as opposed to someone like yourself having to phone in sick due to Brie poisoning or something ridiculous, you know, in order not to shaft yourself. So it's really easy for billionaire Kim Kardashian, Nee West, to go, "Come on, step your pussy up, do this, do that." Whereas you were actually, you had your nose to the grindstone. But I think a lot of people, I think a lot of younger generation, I think they think, "Hang on, I'll be famous, it'll be fine." Because I don't think they realise you can be famous with no money, by the way.
Yes.
And you, as long as you're getting invited to the events, then that's your food. But, you know, they don't understand the bigger picture.
They don't. And it's amazing. I mean, if I've got a fiver for the amount of mums that will actually say to me with a straight face, "You know, Tess, I've got wee Jessie, and she's a great actress, and or she's a great singer, or he's this and that." You think, you could just do what you do and make them famous, and you kind of like think, "Oh my God, you really have no idea.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I mean, no idea. And and now I'm kind of like well versed in it, and I'm like, you know, the only thing, even with my kids now, the most important ingredient you can never take away from somebody is talent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people forget that to have the talent, you need to go through the grindstone. Mm-hmm. You need to study and learn, and as I call it, your craft. Mm-hmm. What is your craft?
Yeah.
You need to be brilliant at your craft. If you're a musician, the amount of people I know that don't read music Uh-huh. I'm sorry, how does that work? Yeah. You know, so there are a million of these stories, and I think we live in this society with social media culture that people think everything is just so easy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they don't realize the hours you put into curating your uh-huh. Instagram, to curating your brand, to pulling it all together. And, you know, nothing happens. You know, it's the classic tale. An overnight success is 10 years.
Yes, 10 years minimum. To become an overnight success. But also it's like with us, do you know what I mean? We spend, you know, people say, oh God, you only work 20 minutes a day. You're like, you know, because I'm on stage for 20 minutes, just like all the other work that goes in. And you just, and interesting what you said there. I just find it fascinating. If you had decided to do, you know, to go to the stockbrokers on your first day mm-hmm. and not go to the interview, reminded me of Christine Bovo that we interviewed, the Piaf singer, mm-hmm. that said there's a moment, always a moment in time that opens the door to your future. And it feels like that was that. Do you remember, for you?
It was if a you hadn't,
what would have happened if you just ended up at the stockbrokers?
Yeah, I would have probably gone off my head with loads of money and been single and living in London.
Yeah, there are worse things, aren't there?
But
the one thing that you are known for as well is philanthropy, your philanthropic side, that's what I was trying to say. And you have experience of some of the organisations that you tirelessly fundraise with because you are a cancer survivor.
Yes, absolutely. And that was another funny journey. In fact, you know, going back to my mum, I remember, this is a really funny story. Well, it's not a funny story, but it's a poignant story, shall we say. I was diagnosed, the actual diagnosis came the day I got the results back from the biopsy was March 21st.
And what year was that?
2017. And I came home from the hospital with my husband, and the girls were here, and you know, I was in a terrible state, as you can imagine. And I said to the girls, you know, I said to, you know, and I can't believe it, it's March 21st. March 21st was the day my mum passed. Oh. And I said to the girls, I can't believe it, that she did this to me on this day of all days. And Talia grabbed me like that with her arms and she said, you get a hold of yourself. She said, why do you think it's the 21st? It's the 21st because she's on your shoulders to tell you she's got this and you've got this and pull yourself together. And it was a real, talk about moments. And actually, I thought, oh my God, you're right. You're right. This isn't a bad sign. This is the sign. Mm-hmm. This is the sign I needed. And that was probably one of, I didn't cry a lot in public and tried never to cry in front of the children. That was probably the only time I did cry in front of the girls. Mm-hmm. But I got a profound strength from that. Mm-hmm. But that, again, people say, what was the hardest part? The hardest part actually was going through it without my mum.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know, I was having to be strong for everyone else around me. Because actually, when you go through something like that, you very rarely think of yourself.
Yeah. You're worrying about other people.
The only thing I could think of, and I said this at the time, I said to my husband, I said, you're so shit at so many things. I can't go. You just wouldn't be able to go. I mean, you can't even turn the washing machine on, never mind look after four children. And that, I was full of fear because I thought, they're useless without me. Mm-hmm. Whether that's an egotistical thing or not, that's what drove me. And I thought, right, do you know what? I need to get my shit together. And it was a journey, and it was bizarre, and I never really realized the impact of it, funny enough, until, because I didn't speak about it a lot afterwards. Uh-huh. Immediately afterwards I felt, you know, I'm also a big believer in that whole universe thing. I don't want to talk about it in case I bring it back.
Negative energy.
Negative energy. And then I did Housewives, and I spoke about it a little on the show, because we're doing this, if you'll remember, we're doing that kind of spiritual healing thing. And I could not get away with the amount of women that contacted me, and young women much younger than me, that said everything I was saying was resonating to them and how grateful they were. And suddenly I thought, gosh, you know, I could maybe help people, because I didn't really know who to turn to when I was going through it, you know. For instance, I've lost count. I've got loads of virtual friends now of women that are going through it now, because people message me all the time. They ask me about hair, they ask me about tamoxifen, they ask me about chemotherapy 7 weeks in, or da-da-da, and I do my very best to get back to every single one of them. Mm-hmm. But the simple reason is that it helps. Yeah. It just helps to have that conversation. And so that was the reason I thought, do you know what? I'm going to set up a fundraising mechanic, and we called it Love Your Barber because I don't know if you know this. I called my new boob Barbara, my old boob Brittany. Barbara's, you know, great. Brittany's a wee bit 90s, a wee bit floppy, but still there.
Who's the bigger star?
Yeah, exactly. Barbara.
So did you have a single mastectomy or a double mastectomy?
Single mastectomy. And again, that's a decision. Sometimes I wish I'd had both.
Well, now, interestingly, a very good friend of ours, and I do a double act with her, Susan Morrison, yes, similarly was diagnosed with breast cancer and in one breast, but opted for a double mastectomy. But the fight she had on her hands
to do that
yes, was phenomenal. And she was so amazed that her body, and they were saying, but the other breast is healthy tissue, so we don't need to take it off. She said, but I don't want to have one breast and not the other. Mm-hmm. But she was very surprised at just how much, you know, yes, she was up against it to get that done.
You're right. They were the same here. I mean, I had a brilliant surgeon. You know, I love him to bits, but that was definitely the message. You know, why would you interfere with something that's healthy and good tissue? Mm-hmm. And so that is a big decision. And also because they're never really going to be the same. I mean, I live with a permanent chicken fillet on Barbara because she's not quite the same size, yeah, as Brittany. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's an issue. But, you know, it is a roller coaster and everybody has different tales, but there is a wonderful, you know, we call it the survivalship community, mm, of which people just sharing their stories and talking. And I think the funniest thing is, you know, this TV stuff that I'm doing, you know, never in a million years would I have imagined when I was going through my chemo that 2 years later I'd be on telly, yeah, doing Housewives. I mean, that is, you know, because you have to reevaluate your whole life. You have to write your will. You have to make sure everything's prepared. You have to have all these horrible, frightening conversations, yeah, with your children and your husband and whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, I feel now that it's a bygone era, mm-hmm, which is great. I don't dwell on it. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about it. I don't get sad about it because I think actually it's kind of made me who I am and it's given me a different perspective in life and I'm here. So actually every day's a blessing.
I think perspective's the wonderful thing that you do get from these situations. How old are your kids now?
Tessie's 25, Talia's 23, Zach is 15 and Johnny is 17. So Zach was 10, you know.
Yeah, that's young.
And Johnny was 13 and they were, you know, I think it was, and Tally was what, 17, 18. It was just, I remember Zach saying to me one night, it was horrific, you know, when I was going through my chemo and stuff, he said to me, "Mummy, can I ask you a question?" I was like, I said, "Are you going to die?"
Oh.
even now yeah, talking about that, I mean, it's just, you know, how do you answer that? And of course my Glaswegian hustle was like, "Don't be so bloody ridiculous." Of course I'm not going to. Are you serious? You know, and almost getting angry at him, you know, not the whole, "Oh darling, don't worry about it." You know, I you know, gave him a slap almost, you know. Yeah. But you know what? He never asked again. And he went, "Okay, all right, okay." And that was okay for him. That's how he dealt with it. But yeah, so I've set up Love Your Barbara and it's literally just, I don't want to fundraise myself. So what I'm going to do, what I'm doing is I'm going to charities to say, "Look, what can I do for you?" Fundraise for them on their behalf, which saves me setting up the whole non-profit organization. So essentially it's like, I called it a label. It's a non-profit label. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a big project with ASDA, which is coming out at the end of the year, which I'm so excited about. With Love Your Barbara, I've done a thing with
Pink Ribbon. It's a great name, Love Your Barbara, isn't it?
Love Your Barbara. You know, I can't tell you the difference it made. And it's a language. This is one of the things I really want everybody to almost instigate when they go through that journey. And your friend Susan will probably tell you the same. The worst word in the world is cancer. And nobody wants to say, "How's your cancer this week?" Yeah. You know, who says that? So what do? They don't go, you know, "Oh, how's your bald head? Is that all?" You know, they don't ask. And then it becomes uncomfortable. Yeah. And then they go, "Oh, how are you?" And you think, "Oh, is she meaning how am I really? Or how is vomiting or whatever?" So when I said to the kids, I said, "Look, I want you to refer to everything in this cancer circle as Barbara." Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to ask for treatment, you refer to Barbara. If I'm going to my chemo, you'll call it the spa. And so when I told all my friends that, it was like a switching a button. Yeah. The conversations and support I got was so much better because they would literally call me and go, "How's Barbara today?" And they'd go, "Actually, she's had a really bad bloody day.
She's in a right bad mood.
She's in a sick, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And how was your spa? I said, oh, it was brutal, you know, vomiting my guts up when I come home. But you know what? It wasn't as bad as last week. So you can have these because of that little bit of comedic influence.
Which we always say is it's using humour. Yeah,
totally.
Humour got me through it. And that's why I say if you change the language, you can have these conversations. Yeah. And it was really quite a simple mechanic, but certainly worked for me and my children because then they could talk about it.
Yeah, but it's amazing that we still have a taboo about any kind of discussion about it. Mm-hmm. I find that really weird. Did you ever turn around and say, Barbara's really getting on my tits today. I'm not wanting to talk to anyone. Just do one.
Many a time. I mean, honestly. We've got loads of stories. And the other funny thing was, you know, people always said to me, you know, oh my God, you know, you can't believe you're going through that. You look so glamorous because, this is my mum's influence in me. My mum coming from the classic Glaswegian stock, you get up, you put your lipstick on, you draw your eyebrows in and you get on with it. And I literally felt her on my shoulders all the time. So I literally would get up. And of course, I'm in fashion. So I had all my hairdresser friends get me all these wigs and cut them and do all that. But again, sometimes I think you need to, it's very easy to feel sorry for yourself when you go through that because you look like shit. Your skin goes a colour of grey that you've never even imagined. You've not got a single hair left in your body. But, you know, like I got my eyebrows tattooed because I was, you know, bald as anything. So there's all these wee things that I think women just need to know. And it's okay to say, actually, you know what, if you pull yourself together, get your wig on, get a nice red lippy, draw in your eyebrows and make yourself a cup of tea, you'll feel a lot better.
Yeah. But it's true, isn't it? Because if you do look better, you feel better. It's just a symbiotic.
Especially when other people are looking at you. Mm-hmm. And that's why I feel so sorry for women that are going through it that don't have partners and don't have families, because then they think, oh, what's the point?
Yeah.
And so these are the people that we really need to reach out and help. You know, I know I did it for my family because I never wanted them to see me how I really looked.
It must be so easy to get into a spiral and just, you know, not bother to get up one day, not bother to have a shower, and then that goes into 2 days.
You know, the first 3 months, my chemo was 6 months, but for the first 3.5 months, it was a struggle to make it from the bed to the toilet. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It was just, you know, because you were, and then what happened, you had 3 week cycles, so you'd have literally an entire week and a half of vomiting, and then somebody just turned the button off, you'd stop vomiting, you'd think, oh, I feel fine now, thank God for that, great. But then you'd have to go back in, it would start all over again. So, you know, it was a cyclical thing, but, you know, there are so, you know, it's such an incredibly frightening disease and how mass it is everywhere, how the amount of people that affected. And I thought to myself, at one point I was thinking to myself, do you know what, I've done well to get to this age, because I got contacted by all these young girls who were 29, 31 with young babies, and I thought, I mean, I am lucky I've got my family there, but how do you cope with that when you've got babies and young children, and it's everywhere.
Yeah. And we still are not educated enough to realise how young people get it at. Do you know what I mean? We always do assume it's sort of women in their sort of late 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, that it's an older woman's disease rather than a young woman's disease.
I think, sorry to interrupt, I think the thing as well, all it does is echo the ignorance that we have as a society about ageism and ageing, because what your health proves, it doesn't matter what number you happen to be that year. You can be 21 and in appalling health, you have no life. You can be like my father, who's 18 in appalling health and have no life. And yet it's still taboo. And yet in, you know, mainstream media, it's Tessa Hartman, whatever your age is, you know, or it's Naomi Campbell, whatever her age is. And it's just like, going to lay off the age, because actually, if you don't have your health, which sounds really cliched, your age absolutely means bugger all, because your life shines.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. No, absolutely. And speaking of ages, you'll like this one to lighten the mood a bit. I think it was the Daily Mail who wrote years ago that Sasha, my husband, is a year older than me. So I'm 52, so he's 53. But years ago, the Daily Mail wrote that he was 40. And so everybody, you know, journalists, not that I want to slag off the journalists, but you know, no matter how many times I've tried to correct them, everyone keeps running with that Sasha's 40. And so this is this is a source of great humour in the house, because he is forever, like, he's probably 42 now, if we go with how long it's been in the domain. He's 42 and I am 52. But the funniest thing is the way society, I found my friends have sent me these conversations of people on housewife forums on Facebook debating the fact that she is a cooker and actually she's borderline pedophile because her husband is 40 and that means they've been married for 26 years, which means that she married him when he was only 15 or 16, and that's disgusting.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Whole conversations, and it's now grown to be this urban thing, and we laugh our heads off, kind of think, wow.
But in the hearts and minds of some people who have just created this whole story and yes. and life for you that doesn't
oh
that
I've had
true,
people I've had amazing. People go, well, he actually looks, he's much better looking and younger looking than her anyway.
Oh, nice. People are really kind,
people,
aren't they?
Honestly, I despair. I despair.
Like, it's comedy gold, but you got to laugh at it, and I think that's one of the best things of being Scottish. You just yeah. treat it as banter.
And it is that thing, is humour is a massive... well, we work together with Stand Up Be Counted, which uses humour in other situations yeah. to help people with illnesses or in the workplace. And yeah, I think humour is underestimated as to how powerful it is, particularly in situations that are traumatic, yeah. you know?
Absolutely.
Because if we don't laugh... we're going to cry.
We'll cry. We will.
Tessa, can I ask, because I just went to see, I know you've had her over to the island. I went to see Sophie Ellis-Bextor the other week and she was at the Style Awards and I'm obsessed that, you know, me and her, we look alike. We're both 45. Yeah. We have the same body. We've had 9 children. When are the Style Awards coming back to Jersey? And more importantly, are you bringing them back to Scotland?
Well, these are very big questions. So I was going to do the Style Awards this year, but I just felt that because of the judging, and the whole point of it is to award businesses that have had that 12 months previous to yeah. you know, put forward their application. So I thought, actually, it's not really fair because COVID will only really go into the green again. So I'm hopefully going to do them next year, God willing. And I have been thinking about doing Scottish Fashion Awards again, literally because, and I'm still in contact with all the people that I yeah. worked with. There's a kind of like new crop coming through now. Uh-huh. And for me, that's the passion for me is the next generation. And that's the people that need the most support. So I am thinking about maybe doing a Fashion Awards next year, literally because I'm watching and following all the time the next crop of talent, and there's a lot of talent there. And also the guys that are at the top of their game are doing really well, and I think that, you know, for them to, the best thing about Fashion Awards was more often than not the networking, uh-huh. you know, because we would bring in the textiles, you know, the manufacturing, the business leaders. You'd have big design houses. They would come, they would meet some of the young crop and they would give them jobs. Yeah. You know, we did so many deals behind the scenes, yeah. you know, Harris Tweed, you know, we got loads of orders for them. So there was lots of things that happened because you're all Scottish, you're all in the one place uh-huh. and you all start networking. And it was very powerful. So from that perspective, I think it would be great just to kind of give a platform yeah. to the next generation of Scots coming through, and yeah. there's a lot of them.
And I also think with new people coming through, what you need for the event is an experienced host. So if you just give me an email,
yes.
we can discuss
think of
money.
I'll try and think of someone suitable for you. I'm sure I know yeah. someone very
You've
good.
Got me
yeah, yeah.
Tessa, thank you so much for joining us. That was brilliant.
Beautiful.
Thank you,
thank really you for being
for your time.
Thank you for
wonderful.
Being so honest.
Thank you. It's always, it's, you know, it's so lovely to hear the Scottish accent.
And good luck going forward with what you, I would imagine you have a cacophony of stuff up your designer sleeve. So we will watch with breath that is bated.
Lovely.
Oh, listen, it's lovely to speak to you both, and thanks so much.
Oh,
for
you
having
too,
me.
Doll. Speak to you soon.
Okay.
See you later.
All right, thanks.
Godspeed, toodles. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.